Blog Talk Radio.
To be the man, you gotta beat the man.
You wanna find out how good you are? You're looking at the measuring stick. Let's go, hook him up!
Edition of Over the Top Radio. Ed. Oh, nothing but quality on this show.
Hey, can you guys hear me?
Yeah, can now.
Okay, I don't know. Something must have been wrong with my headset or something. But I was doing the intro, and then I heard Craig start doing an intro, so it kind of like...
We got to hear you.
All right, well, starting the show with technical difficulties, that's a good sign.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, what's going on, guys? What's happening?
About the same. Better than you.
Oh, I'm all right. I'm just losing my fucking mind trying to untangle my headset now. But anyway, we are doing the show a day early because I guess Craig has something to do tomorrow. So we are finishing before we... Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, my son has a Christmas play tomorrow, so I, you know.
Oh, is he in the play, or is he just like a school play thing?
It's a school play, yeah.
Oh, well, that's cool. So
well, I figure if he's going to the play, then his son is in the play.
When he's out there.
If he's going to the play, I figure his son is in the play.
That's true. Yeah, I don't usually just, you know, take the whole family out and see a play, you know, on Broadway or anything like that.
Well, you know, you're kind of cheap, and I would imagine they don't charge, so I would imagine that'd be the easy way to go see a play is to go see some kids doing it instead of paying for it.
I'm kind of cheap.
Yeah.
Hmm.
You're almost like Brian. You know, I was thinking to myself, you know, you were complaining about Brian not wanting to pay those $10, but then you were also bragging how you haven't paid for the website in 5 years. So I was kind of thinking to myself, that's like $500.
Yeah.
Yeah, so. You know.
Well, Brian signed me up. I didn't ask for it or anything.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't turn down charity.
Well, we actually have a caller calling in here. So I think Katrina said something about we were having another co-host. So let me click him on and see who we got here. Caller calling from area code 302. Who's this?
Don't sound so depressed over the fact you have another co-host tonight.
Well, I already got two jabronis, so I guess the third one's not going to help.
Two jabronis? You were talking, and we could not hear you. Who's the jabroni?
That's
speaking
true.
Of which, I'm going to try and plug my headset on, so if I disappear for a few seconds, that's what's going on. So,
wait, he was talking, and no one could hear him? It's like the greatest show of that ever.
Yeah. Yeah, there was just a bunch of blank space, so I said, you know, I might as well do the intro, so I did a little intro, and
it was
then
like,
he figured out.
Maybe it was like on Observer Live when Dave and Brian talked over each other for 5 minutes because they couldn't hear one another.
Right.
I bet Dave's just disdain in that one clip where it's like, are you there? Brian, are you there? There's nobody there.
Hey, can you guys hear me now?
Yeah.
Yeah. Unfortunately.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, whatever. And apparently I sounded like I was crackling last week, so if anyone's listening, if I sound bad, text me or hit me up on Facebook and I'll unplug the headset here. But anyway, what did you say?
I said you always sound bad.
I sound awesome. I got a sexier voice than you, Craig.
Sure. Well, you do have a face for radio, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure all four of us probably have that.
And right,
untrue,
blind.
Yeah, I think it's fair. He definitely does. But if I could start finishing my intro that I've been trying to do for like 8 minutes here, we're going to continue our conversation about Starcade from last year. Hopefully we'll move into a few years where Craig will actually be able to participate. And
I know
Ship has seen all of this, so we should be able to have a good show here. So, Craig, you're about to say something?
I was going to say, we're starting with 86, and that was like one of my most fondest memories of Starcade.
Yeah, this is the first Starcade I think I saw. Well, no, I saw 85. This was the second. So, I actually have the 3-hour closed circuit version of this show on DVD.
Oh, wow, you got to see some bad stuff.
Yeah, I get to see Tim Horn. I get to see Hector Guerrero and Baron Von Raschke against Chuska Watley and the Barbarian.
Hey, I was always a big fan of Tim Horner, all right? Nothing wrong with the White Lightning and Tim Horner hanging out with Nelson Royal.
Yeah. Tim Horner and Nelson Royal against Donna and Rocky Kernodle. Did you ever see Donna and Rocky Kernodle on America's Funniest Home Videos? They, like, won the prize 1 week.
No.
Really?
Yes, I swear to God. One of those early America's Funniest Home Videos, they won like for best video 1 week. I can't remember what it was, but they were definitely on the show.
Was there a ring involved?
Was there a what?
Was there a ring involved?
No, I can't remember. I mean, it wasn't the classic clip where, you know, the guy's playing baseball and he jumps over the fence and his pants get hung up on the fence and he falls out of his pants.
Yeah.
It wasn't that one.
Did he reveal the magic trick to watch Don's career disappear?
I know, maybe the magic trick to make his matches watchable.
Speaking of Don Coryell, I don't even know if I'm saying his name right. Just a few years earlier, he was like, he was a guy who just got plain lucky because he was a very plain, average-looking dude, just an average-looking wrestler, but somehow he got hooked up with Sergeant Slaughter and was like his corporal or whatever. And him and Sarge had a great feud with Ricky Steamboat and Jay Engelbert, who we talked about on the last show. And unfortunately, his push didn't last very much longer after that, and his kid never made it past upper jobber status.
Keith Larson. That was his kid's other name.
Yeah, and it was amazing, too, because he was so in the mix with Ivan Koloff, and then that move happened. And it was amazing because he and I'm trying to think, the guy who became Boris Zukov, Private Nelson, was the other one. And the Steamboat Young was, for those who didn't see, that's what always boggles my mind when Dave actually said something about Ricky Steamboat never really being a draw. It's like, Jesus, he and Jay Youngblood with Slaughter and Kernoodle and with the Briscoes, but especially Slaughter and Kernoodle. That was ridiculous. Whatever it was, 15,000 people, and then 15,000 people literally turned away. I mean, that was that whole feud was incredibly awesome, and just he was the victim of not being, man, he was part of that malaise era where it was like Dory Funk and Jimmy Valiant and Kabuki. There were some guys there, but it was right before that Florida invasion of guys came in and up with Dusty Rhodes, and he just got swept out and he ended up in the WWF for a while and did a little bit there, but just he was, you know, he was the first big victim. I mean, when they shoved him out the door and the Koloffs turned on him, it was like, even as a little kid and Mark wrestling fan, it was just like, This isn't good.
Yeah, go. People should go to YouTube and look up that Don Carnola and Sergeant Slaughter against Steamboat and Youngblood feud, and I think they got like a whole channel like just with clips leading up to that big match in Greensboro.
Oh yeah, the road to Greensboro.
Awesome. Yeah.
It's amazing. You guys did an entire show last week on Starkey. You got from 83 to 86. It was like Brian and I doing the best of 2011 on the Observer show, where we got to like January 31st.
Yeah, but our show was entertaining. Unlike Brian.
It was a crappy year for wrestling, let's be honest.
That's why it should have been a great show. That's why it should have been a great show, but Brian was a fail. But anyway, continue, Couture.
Continue with what?
Rest of the card.
Okay, Baron Von Rescue beat Shasta Watley and the Barbarian.
If it would have been Lasertron, you could have added another star to that match just on the name alone.
Yeah, I doubt it. Okay.
And you know what? I always like Baron Von Rescue for some reason, Rescue. He just always entertained me, even though he looked like he was like 60 years old back when he was like 30.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, you know, I can't tell you for the life of me, because like Paul Storm's army with like Tejo Khan and Paul Jones was dressed up like Hitler. And, like, Shasta Watley was incredibly racist. And, you know, the Barbarian was cool. Conga the Barbarian was cool. So it was like Baron Von Rashi. It's like I can't even remember why Baron Von Rashi would have been teaming with Hector Guerrero and when exactly, you know, Paul Jones' army turned on him.
I remember it was like they did, like, a six-man or something. It was when Rick Rude came in 86. And they did some kind of, like, a six-man, and Baron Von Rashi, like, I don't know, it was one of those miscommunication things. He got hit or something at the end of the match and got pinned, and then Paul Jones blamed him and put the claw on Paul Jones or something. And everyone, right? He's like that guy from The Hills Have Eyes. He's just an ugly person. You know, you know what I'm talking about? I never got Baron Von Rashke. Although he was cool when he dressed up as a is like Baroness Von Rashke when he was in Rick Martel's corner against Jimmy Garvin in the AWA.
Always killed me when he was a good guy in the AWA and, you know, the year before. I guess it was about 2 years before when Pro Wrestling USA was on. And it was just like, you know, he's the good guy. And it's like, oh, there goes the Baron goose-stepping. Like, huh? I'm supposed to, you know, be booing Stan Hansen and cheering this guy?
Uh-huh.
And he was the leader of the Team Challenge Series team, the Baron's Blitzers. The leaders of one of those teams.
We need to find all the video for that Team Series thing, and we need to do a whole show just on that.
And burn, dude. I always like the claw as the finishing hold. I know the Von Erichs made it work, but the best story I ever heard, Ed Dog Moretti was telling a story, and I wish I could remember who he was talking about, but his finisher was the claw, and Moondog was in the ring with him, and he went to put the claw on Moondog, and Moondog dodged, and his hand hit the ropes, and he came back and put the claw on himself and sold it.
That's where wrestling was awesome back then.
Yeah.
Okay, go to Wahoo McDaniel beat Rick Rude in an Indian strap match. I don't remember much about this match. I guess it was okay.
Was this the first match on the commercial tape, or the closed circuit TV, or when did that start?
I think
the
it was.
Match on the closed circuit was Hector and Baron against Shasta and Barbarian.
Okay.
I remember the big clamshell. Do you remember the big clamshell tape thing?
Oh, yeah.
That they had out? I was like, I thought those were pretty cool.
54 bucks back in the day.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
You got to wait like 10 weeks to order it. I mean, to get the fucking thing in the mail. I can get it tomorrow.
Yeah.
I'll order it now.
Yeah.
The match is from Wahoo is basically on his like last legs, and Rude was just barely coming up. This is probably, I guess after World Pass, this would, we got Pitt pushed in Memphis and then in World Pass, and then that's when he started getting a little bit of a push in the NWA before he went to WWE.
Yeah, I like his team. He and Mandy were a good team, I thought.
Yeah, they were a really good team. And, you know, and then Paul Jones graduated from the Hitler outfit back into the garish suits again that he had on before, and it was just like he never fit. Obviously, there's a story of, you know, Rudin Fernandez crapping in his top hat. And it just, you know, they wanted, you know, Johnny Weaver was still doing commentary at this time. Obviously, Nelson Royal, and every year for the Bunkhouse Stampede, they had Nelson tell the story of the Bunkhouse Stampede, and he's still on there. And there's still those remnants from the past that they wanted to hold on to. And it was just like, you know, Manny and Rick Rude did not need Paul Jones, and it was pretty obvious. And the thing I remember about the Rude match was him, Wahoo, just whipping the shit out of him, just completely beating him senseless. And Fernandez and them beating up the Rock and Roll Express, I thought that was really good too, because that was, I guess, a little bit later on, you know, around that time where they took the tag titles from the Rock and Roll Express, and I always thought that was a really good feud too. That was probably
the peak
of me ever liking Manny Fernandez, even though I liked him with Dusty Rhodes when he first came in.
Yeah, I think it was like, because, you know, they did the big the Rock and Roll Express match, which we'll talk about in a bit, and, you know, they beat on Morton's arm, like the old match, and it was like 2 weeks later on Saturday Night TV that they like did like this Fernandez and Rude challenge him to the match, and you know, they had the injury thing and they ended up winning the titles. So actually, this was when Rude and Fernandez were together, I took Paul Jones a little bit more seriously as a manager.
And I liked him from before when he had the Zambouli Express, when J.J. Dillon went back down to Florida, I think it was. And he sold him the Zambouli Express, and that was at that kind of that weird dead time too, where there was a transition from Dory Funk and Gary Hart and Ernie Ladd booking over to Dusty Rhodes, where he was good, and then he became such a shitastic cartoon. And I never liked Jimmy Valiant either, and that was another thing where I seemingly am in the minority on people from that time. And like Brian, every time he watches 24/7, he loves him to death, but just Jimmy Valiant and Bugsy McGraw and Avalanche Bud Collins, those guys drove me nuts. And the fact that after that, it was always Paul Jones linked in with a Jimmy Valiant feud, I just didn't like anybody involved.
Hey, well, that's because it went on for so fucking long.
You should just have good taste in wrestling. That shit was awesome. Jimmy Valiant, Bugsy McGraw, Lucifer Jones, they were awesome.
Oh, God. Rufus, yes, there's another one. Rufus Earl Jones, but the slowest moving brother I've ever seen in my life.
And speaking of
Central States Wrestling, good God.
Speaking of Jimmy Valiant, you go to Jimmy Valiant pinned Paul Jones in a hair versus hair match. It was Paul Jones' hair against the hair of Big Mama.
Right.
And imagine if she had lost her hair, made her tits look even bigger.
That was the one great part, the lead up to that feud, when they did the him playing harmonica and Hannah Joy, I think, is playing, and the Big Mama rolls up and takes Jimmy away. I'll give it up. That was actually great.
And they had
how comes a disheveled Big Mama to pick up Jimmy?
They had Manny Fernandez. He was in he was above the ring in the cage. The cage was named Betty Lou. I don't know why the cage had to have a name. I don't know.
Maybe that was his ex-wife.
That's what the Boogie Woogie Man called it.
Yeah.
How could you not like the Couture? What the hell? Seriously.
Because everybody involved sucked.
Paul Jones sucked. Jimmy Valiant's entertaining to watch. But his act gets a little
to watch wrestle. He's entertaining
right.
To watch do a promo.
Yeah, and dancing the whole time, dancing while he's selling, dancing while he's on the shine, just dancing, getting pinned.
That's what
dancing.
I think I didn't like.
Yeah,
because I always like
that
those
elbow,
like those.
That fucking
well,
elbow.
The elbow and the thumb.
Yeah, the thumb.
Like, you know, I liked like Steve Williams and Ted DiBiase and guys who I knew were football players, and like really, it was just like, I don't know, I just something about like you hit a man with a thumb, and I mean, kissing Tony Schiavone was always funny. But it was just like, you know, the offense in the ring was just like, come on, this is like somebody's like crazy redneck uncle. It was hard for me to take it seriously.
That's why he was part of the comedy act of the show, you know? I mean,
Jimmy Valiant was like the retarded cousin that got kicked out of Skinner.
He's even the bug eyes. They said, I do too many drugs, baby. Just, you know, all wigged out.
Yeah.
And I see Jimmy, like, pictures of Jimmy Valiant today, and I don't know if that's a tattoo or if he had his do-rag on too tight, because he's got a line, like, across his head for some reason. I don't know what deal is that.
Permanently indented in his forehead. That's good.
He looked 200 years old when he was, like, 30.
Yeah.
Okay, moving on. We had Tully Blanchard beat Dusty Rhodes in the first blood match to win the NWA TV title.
Love
I guess because Dusty didn't want to do the job here. So, he bled.
I was shocked by this because this Magnum TA had just died, and Dusty had, like, Magnum written in the side of his head. And it was just like, I could not believe it when it was just like, wow. Because I remember that was Magnum TA. They actually, I was living outside D.C. at the time, and then the all-news station actually ran the report of the AP wire. So I can't imagine what it would have been like in the Carolinas with people losing their minds. But I could not believe in my little fan mind that Dusty could actually lose this. And it was just like, damn. And that one was for Magnum TA. That sucks.
I love this because, you know, the build-up for it, Dusty, you know, hits JJ with an elbow, and JJ gigs, and that's
right,
just the lead of his, yeah, his elbow is so lethal, it could bust him open at any moment, and this is the one where Dusty ends up bloodying Tully, but JJ had Vaseline, and so JJ cleans him up, puts Vaseline on his forehead, and hands him... He hit him roll of quarters, right?
Yeah, he hit him with roll of quarters.
Yeah, hit him with the roll of quarters. Dusty comes up. Yeah, Dusty comes up bleeding. Tully's, you know, covered, and Tully is awarded the television title.
Yeah, Dusty didn't need a title back then. I mean, Tully was always great as a champion, you know, with the tag team or the TV title or something like that. He was always, you know, like a good champion. So Dusty didn't need that stuff back then, so.
Why was Dusty leaving the TV title? I mean, you know.
What was he what?
I'm surprised he was actually even, you know, the TV champion at the time. I mean,
it's
just a big difference between, like, wrestling today and back then. I mean, Dusty Rhodes is a TV title, and now you have guys who are above the Intercontinental title.
Big deal. I mean, I always thought back then we were a big deal, so.
Yeah.
And this was coming off, you know, the backstory was all throughout 86. It was Wahoo McDaniel and Ronnie Garvin matches throughout the Great American Bash, and there was always this stuff on TV. And if I remember, what kind of led to this coming out of the Bash was Tully ended up losing the national title to Wahoo McDaniel, and later on it ended up getting, you know, blended in with Nikita Koloff's U.S. title. They did that in L.A. But Ronnie Garvin and Dusty Rhodes there was something where Dusty kicked Ronnie Garvin's hand after Tully had laid him out with quarters, but the referee was down, and then Ronnie got up and punched him, and that ended up kind of, and again, it's amazing the booking. You know, you have all these intertwining storylines and things like that where, you know, everything kind of tied together and things came out of it and growth happened out of it. It's not like you could do that in wrestling today. Heaven forbid, it may actually be watchable. But, you know, that was ended up leading to all this, too, which, you know, again, it's amazing when those seeds were planted to start doing things to lead up to the big show.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think Tully was probably Dusty's best opponent. He made him look the best, I thought.
I thought so, too. I mean, outside of Flair, absolutely, at least having, like, the long match. And the fact that Tully could actually slingshot suplex Dusty, I mean, that was always amazing, too. And I mean, obviously, Dusty had to do a lot of the work there, too. But still, I mean, I always thought they were very natural. You know, Tully got lucky because I don't think Wahoo even liked his ass when he came into, and I think it had more to do with Wahoo and Joe Blanchard for Southwest. But, I mean, Tully went in there and got lucky being able to be with Wahoo right off the bat. And then it pretty much, you know, I think he had a,
I think he got tied in with Jimmy Valiant for a little bit, and probably like everybody did, but then came out of it with Dusty. And, I mean, that did wonders for Tully Blanchard because there weren't better people to go along with him.
Yeah, Tully Blanchard probably my favorite heel of all time. He was a heel. I mean, there was nothing to like about him.
Yeah.
See, ever since he fucking started back in him and Gino, I mean, speaking of, you know, I've seen, I used to watch Wahoo beat the living shit out of him like he was fucking like a little 20-year-old kid.
Tully was like the heel Ricky Steamboat. You know, I could never see Ricky Steamboat being a heel. I could never see Tully being a face.
What? Like, can you imagine if you had Gino and Tully against Youngblood and Steamboat? If that would have actually happened, imagine Gino and Tully both in Mid Atlantic at that time too. Because great, Southwest wasn't gonna last forever anyway. And Gino probably, I don't know if he would have stayed in Texas or not, but I'm sure he'd been, you know, lit up by the money to go over there. That it would have been amazing. Just Gino and Magnum TA, Gino and anybody.
Yeah. Go ahead.
The next match was NWA World Tag Team Title, the Rock and Roll Express beat Ole and Arn Anderson in the steel cage match when Morton pinned Ole with I think this was the first time I saw this finish where, you know, like the heel picks the babyface up for a slam and the other babyface drop kicks him on top or something like that, and that was always one of my favorite finishes. But this was a hell of a – this probably the best match on the show.
Yeah, easily.
I'm not going to disagree with that. That may have been when they had the kind of the silver belts. I think it was like that they did these 25th anniversary silver tag team title belts too. They were using at that time. They were the old throwback Mid Atlantic version looking titles that they had as well too. But yeah, I mean this was by far the best match on there from what I remember.
Rick took the belt with him when he left, and
did he really?
Yeah, he took the silver anniversary. He kept it. When he went to the WWE.
I think still having the Western States Heritage title in a bag in Minnesota.
that was all the matches from Greensboro, and then they go to Atlanta, Georgia, and the Omni. And the first match was Brad Armstrong went to a 15-minute time limit draw with Jimmy Garvin.
Oh, that's all you got to say about that.
Yeah.
Oh, and by the way, when these matches were going on too, they were running, you know, they were alternating matches as you were watching them on the big screen.
Yeah.
You know, at the Omni and in Greensboro, so it wasn't like they, you know, Tim Horder was starting off and they were just sitting there in Atlanta, just sitting there watching that whole card end before theirs began.
Yeah. Then they had the U.S. Tag Team Champions Crusher Khrushchev and Ivan Koloff beat the Kansas Jayhawks, Bobby Jaggers and Dutch Mantel in no DQ match.
Yeah, the failures of the Kansas Jayhawks. There's another one as a little kid where, you know, he had Dutch Mantel talking about Shoe Baby. He named his bullwhip. But it was, you could tell they weren't going to be there long, and I guess, I don't know, I think Dutch Flames Dusty or they weren't, you know. He just wasn't one of Dusty's guys, so it wasn't going to work out, so he wasn't there for that long. But, you know, both those two, it was always, you know, brought up in storyline. It's like, you know, they can't beat the Russians. You know, what failures they are that you can't beat the Russians. So,
I remember they promoted the Kansas City Jayhawks coming in on Saturday TV for a few weeks, and then I remember them wrestling maybe one or two jobber matches, and then this match, and then they're pretty much gone after that.
They were there for a while.
I don't remember them being there for that long, though.
They did some stuff with the Midnight Express.
I just remember them. Well, what I really remember is, you know, of course, Bobby Jaggers, because he spent so much time here in San Antonio, but I was actually excited when they came in. But
how come they
I was, too.
How come they never brought Ron Bass back and they could add a Shoe Baby versus Miss Betsy match?
And the thing was, too, I think they were jettisoned off. They make, because I'm trying to think when Central States, the whole thing happened when Crockett bought Central States, it ended up being put on Home Team Sports, which broadcasts the Oriole games and went from Maryland down into the Carolinas. Now it's, you know, it's morphed into whatever the Comcast Sportsnet thing is now. But they, it came on, and that's when they started bringing over, like, the Italian Stallion and guys, and Rocky King, and they may have been jettisoned over there for a little while, too, after they debuted, because that's when, like, the Mod Squad and the Batten Twins and dudes like that started showing up randomly on Saturday night. Like, Superstar Bill Dundee ended up being moved over to Central States for a while, and Sam Houston, and there were a couple other, I think the Warlord, too, because that's when he was managed by Baby Doll. So I think they may have been switched over at that time, too. And then, you know, because Jagger is obviously being from there anyway and spent a lot of time there. So I don't know. I think they may have went over there first before they left.
Yeah, and well, speaking of Central States, in the next match you had the Central States champion Sam Houston beat Bill Dundee via DQ. And I got to say, this was a hell of a match. These two guys worked really good together.
Yeah, Sam Houston was awesome. I don't care what Craig has to say.
I didn't say he wasn't good. I said he was skinny.
Okay. But Bill Dundee, I always loved Bill Dundee. I don't know why. He's a short little fucker, but
right.
I always, he's just real entertaining. He's, you know, he kind of had, like, I guess a little bit of a European style, whatever. He was a little different, but I always liked Bill Dundee. And I remember watching the clips. I forgot what video it was. The clips from him and Lawler. And
yeah.
Yeah, the one match. That, I mean, that was just, I mean, I wish I could have seen the whole match. I've only seen the clips of it. But, you know, I always liked Bill Dundee.
And Sam Houston cost Baby Doll her job.
Oh.
and it's like one of the biggest alcoholics ever to come out of wrestling.
Well, he had
his family.
Yeah, in the family.
I hope Jake Roberts is in that Legends house.
Oh, God.
He got to be him and that energy for sure.
Oh, God. That's a bad idea.
No, this is a great idea.
It's going to morph from the Legends House to Legends Rehab with Dr. Drew.
And I'm perfectly fine with that.
But instead of Dr. Drew, they got to have Gary Busey be the fucking doctor. Like,
and Iron Sheik, he can play the Jeff Conway role.
Right.
The dude in the chair.
Dr.
Oh,
the Orient.
He dies.
Jeez. Oh,
okay. Next we had... What I thought was, like, the second best match of the night was Big Bubba beat Ronnie Garvin in a Louisville street fight. This match was awesome.
This was good.
There was
even
the
though
clip Craig hates Ronnie Garvin.
I didn't say I hated Ronnie Garvin. He was just way overrated. And
hey, don't badmouth Ronnie Garvin. Is he for me in that time? Because I started watching I had a chance to see Georgia right when WWF had pretty much destroyed it. So I always remember the Sunday morning show. I always loved Ronnie Garvin's belt that he got from Jake Roberts. It was the TV title that had all the flags on it. I love that belt. But I always liked Ronnie Garvin. It was, you know, obviously, you know, winning the title from Flair the next year, you know, was a completely different thing. But Ronnie Garvin, I always liked because he was just like a guy who could whip some ass. I thought he was a pretty good wrestler, did unique stuff too as far as like, you know, like the face bends at the camera and stuff like that where he had like these inventive ways to tie a guy up and just like torture them. So I always like took Garvin as like, okay, he's like legit and again, the Montreal guy, he was kind of like Dundee where he was just a little bit different. You know, a Regal or somebody like that. I really always liked Ronnie Garvin, especially at that time. And Big Bubba was awesome. Big Bubba was awesome from the time he stepped out when he went to the UWF, did all that sort of stuff too. But at that time, he was so cool as Cornette's bodyguard.
Hey, I still remember the chair spot with Dusty.
Yeah,
that was awesome. One of the best of all time.
This is when a street fight, you came out in your street clothes and they were, you know, Ronnie Garvin was wearing his blue jeans and his cowboy boots and a shirt and a bandana for unexplicable reasons. But anyway, the famous clip is the one they used to sell the DVD where it showed Garvin just destroying him with a punch, and Bubba took a bump where he never left his feet. He just fell like the two towers, you know, just straight back onto his back. And just an awesome, awesome street fight.
Yeah, Big Bubba kept throwing him out of the ring, and so he just picked up a soda from ringside and just threw it right in his face. I thought that was awesome. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Craig doesn't like Ronnie Garvin because back in the 80s, he had pictures of Miss Atlanta Lively on his wall, and like 2 years ago, he just found out it was Ronnie Garvin.
So. Awesome. I'm not going to defend my non-appreciation for Ronnie Garvin. Again, I just thought if I was to, you know, be asked to work, okay, you can work Ronnie Garvin or you can work, Booker T. I would take Booker T in a second because Ronnie Garvin worked snug.
Okay, well, how about if you had to choose between Ronnie Garvin getting the shit beat out of you or Bruce Beefcake and getting a bad haircut? Which would you choose?
See, that's about a toss-up, because I got great hair.
I got to take Garvin on that one.
I always wondered with Beefcake, I wonder if the job guy, like, saw their name against Beefcake in the 80s and said, oh, fuck.
I remember I was pissed off. I was so pissed off when he cut part of George South's fucking mullet. Oh, dude, he was a baby face, but I fucking hated him, dude. I hated him more than any of the heels at the time after that.
I hated him. Those guys probably liked seeing their name up there because at least they got an extra payoff for the fact they were getting their hair cut.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, when they get job guys, when WWE gets job guys, they come in and they sign on the line and you get paid right away. And if they use you or not, you still take home the pay. I would imagine if I saw my name against Beefcakes there, I would just slip out the back with my payoff. And run.
They get paid more than the stars for TV, didn't they?
Back then they did.
Sometimes, yeah.
Well, because you get a contracted guy like, I don't know,
The WWE guys for TV got $50.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the job guys would get like $200 or something.
Wow.
I think it was a one-time shot now.
Yeah. Yeah, job guys now get $250. Cash. So,
and the stars were getting over, you know, being on the TV was getting them over more than the job guys
were
doing anything for them, really. So that's why they would pay more. The next match was Road Warriors defeated Midnight Express in a scaffold match. I've yet to see a good scaffold match, but the end of this was good.
Definitely.
Yeah, the still clips were better. Like, you know, that week after where they spliced in the footage real quick for the, you know, for the next week, and it was just like, okay, you didn't see it live, you know, because I ended up seeing it later on tape. And it was like, you know, man, that was in a way kind of a disappointment, even though it was, like, amazing to watch. I could not wrap my brain around why anybody would want to fall off a scaffold for any reason. I could not wrap my brain around it. I remember seeing a picture in PWI of Coco Ware and Jerry Lawler. It was like, I mean, like a 9-foot scaffold or something like that. And it was I could not wrap my brain around. And that the thing is too, when they showed the lead up to this, they were playing. They had the Road Warriors and Paul Ellering were up on a scaffold, and they had either watermelons or pumpkins.
Pumpkins.
And,
yeah.
And they it was pumpkins. Yeah. Okay, and they had the names on. It was just like Loverboy Dennis, and it would fall to the ground and like that stop action. So it was like, you know, this. It's so cheesy in hindsight, but it was just like, wow, they're actually going to do this. Then you saw how high the scaffold was up, and it was like, I still can't believe, and obviously Cornette's knees prove it, but it's just like, I can't believe this. And to hear Cornette tell the story of Dusty talking like, you're going to swing, and you're going to fall, and Big Bubba going to catch you like the girls on the football team. Like, what? Seriously? Like, I can't, I don't know. There's why I'm not a pro wrestler, because I could not be talked into that dumb shit.
Yeah, they actually had to, I think, like, after this first match, they had to, they had to drop the scaffold down a few feet. It's too high.
Yeah.
Now, as far as bad scaffold matches, I've never seen the whole match, but I remember seeing clips of a Bill Dundee Coco Beware scaffold match that from the clips of it made it look like it was fucking awesome. So that's why I was actually excited when they were going to have this match, but apparently just never, none of them were ever very good after that.
If Vince Russo was around in the 80s, I figured he'd come up with this match. That sounds like an idea.
I'm surprised he never booked scaffold matches. you know.
I don't think he's allowed to. I'm sure it probably came up, and they're like, no, no, we're not doing
Didn't
that.
Didn't in Global they had the scaffold match where you had a bungee cord tied to you or something like that?
Oh, yeah, they knocked him out of the bungee, the ramp. It's too low. It's too low.
And didn't Mike Davis, he bounced so far up, he went to the moon and got a moon rock?
Yeah, he got a moon rock. And it was like the best. It was like the best storyline in the history of Global Wrestling Federation.
Oh God!
I wonder if it was a Chaz being Tug Tyler's tugboat son or whatever the hell it was.
I wonder if there's been a scaffold match since the New Jack Vic Grimes incident.
Oh God, that was a bad one.
Yeah, that was no good.
I remember they had one in. Oh well, they did them in TNA. Elevation X.
That's sort of, yeah.
It was like just a couple of years ago.
All right, okay.
Well, you know the other thing that this it was kind of a kayfabe buster at the time back then was they went and did these scaffold matches around the loop, like you know they went to the DC Armory and the Baltimore Civic Center, and it was like you're doing scaffold matches like every night because we got both sets of TV or just for both sets of commercials, and it was like. Wow, and then, you know, we would, yeah, on good clear days, we would actually be able to get, I think it was Channel 48 or 57 out of Philadelphia, where it was like, they would, you hear the announcements to do them there, it's like, how are they doing scaffolds? I mean, they're men falling off scaffolds, and it was just like, okay, I don't know, that kind of like, I don't know, kind of blew my mind, it was like, all right, this is really kind of not real.
This was like, I think that's where Howard Payne quit. They were supposed to do scaffold matches with Road Warriors and like the bashes in '88, and as Warlord falling off a scaffold is bad plan.
I remember the one with sending Steve Austin and PN News. It was like, how is this becoming a fallback match? Like, I know Texas Death Match wouldn't make any sense, but like that would make more sense to me. I wouldn't think, you know, I'm thinking of something from PN News and Stunning Steve scaffold. No.
And then it was Capture the Flag.
Which is, you know, exactly what Destination X is. Capture
yeah.
the flag.
Oh, gosh. Okay, yeah, we've talked about that long. Anyway, the main event was NWA champion Ric Flair. It says beating Nikita Koloff via DQ. I actually think this was a double DQ.
Yeah.
It was a double DQ. And
yeah,
this
was
originally going to be Magnum's match and maybe his world title win.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I can
I
still
the
see
Nikita
the car in my
mind. Teaming with Dusty. I always love that. I thought that was just so perfect.
Yeah, I remember match wasn't that good. Nikita was, for all the hype he had, he was not a good wrestler.
Frank, do you have anybody from that era of wrestling?
Sure, there was lots of good guys. There was Tully and the Rock and Roll and Dusty. Okay, maybe not Dusty.
I was always a fan of Nikita's. I liked him.
Yeah,
I actually enjoyed the matches with him and Flair when he was the heel, the earlier ones.
Yes.
Oh, 85? Yeah.
That was good
and that's
stuff.
That's what I think I think the fact that it was a double DQ, too, and it was just like, and I was a Flair fan even when Nikita turned good. It was like, you know, it was just like, love Ric Flair. And it was like, again, it was just kind of shitty. I mean, and again, after Dusty and, you know, the Road Warriors knocked the Midnights off, that was incredible and everything. But it was like a double DQ in the main event with Ric Flair. I don't know. It was very, again, as a fan of Magnum TA, it was just like, again, a guy lost for Magnum. You know, where basically he didn't win for Magnum. And then on the flip side of being a Flair fan, it was just like, you know, another disqualification.
Yeah, well, I could say it kind of, you know, Nikita just turned babyface, so he shouldn't lose a bit. And they're not going to put the title on him, so, you know, you're not going to beat Flair. But, I mean, I think maybe the scaffold match should have been last.
Yeah. Yeah, it probably would have been a better,
and also in this
you know,
match, you know, Mick Foley had a chapter in his book about this, and we actually got to see one in this match. We got to see a penis suplex.
I was not aware of that.
The big Ric Flair vertical suplex on Nikita Koloff, and something pops out of his singlet, and Tommy Young jumps on it and fixes it.
That would not be in the job description, I take it.
That sounded so fucking gay.
That's why nobody said anything right there.
Okay.
Hey, you know what the one good thing about all of this is, too? 1986, another year of using the Frank Stallone song when it came to doing the highlights.
Oh, I love that. That was awesome. That was like the best wrestling theme at the time, like for an event.
Actually, it really was. It was awesome.
Okay, let's move on to Starrcade 1987, Chi-Town Heat in Chicago. And this was the first time when they were out of the Carolinas. So this was after the UWF sale. And the first match was Sting and Michael Hayes and Jimmy Garvin went to a draw with Eddie Gilbert, Rick Steiner, and Larry Zbysko. And all I remember about this match is the best move of the match and probably the entire night was Sting doing a suicide dive that the cameraman totally missed.
This time sucked so bad because it's like you look at all the talent and everything. They blew the UWF sale, but it was like the Bunkhouse Stampede going to Long Island and this show, which this is a completely skippable show. The whole thing is a completely skippable show, and it's like that's their big show of the year. So it's like when people can't believe, like, how could you not have been an NWA fan back then? It's because a lot of times the big events shit the bed, and this was a great example of it. It's basically six UWF guys going at it. Larry Zbysko had just taken over, the Western States Heritage title. It was around the time with him and Wyndham or whatever it was, so he had some extension into the UWF and was hanging out with Baby Doll. Everybody else had come from the UWF, and it was just like these guys, they were getting their asses kicked on TV anyway. And being a UWF fan, Mid-South fan, it always pissed me off because it was just like they go to a draw. Like, you're not even, again, even as a kid, you're not even letting the UWF guys win anything. Like, they all have to go to a draw against each other. It was so stupid.
Yeah, actually, a lot of people didn't. I actually kind of like this this point. I mean, when the UWF thing first went down, because I like seeing all the NWA and UWF guys on each other's shows. I thought that was pretty cool at the time. You know, it's kind of seeing guys from a different company on there. But, yeah, I see what you're talking about. And then the next match you had UWF champion Dr. Dusty Williams and Barry Windham. And this was a really disappointing match considering the two guys that were in there.
Yeah. The one spot when Williams tried to do the leapfrog and Barry basically headbutted him in the nuts.
Well, he's a tall dude.
Well, granted, and Steve Williams probably not going to win any high jumps. Was that legit, or
no? That was
a planned spot.
That was just a whole, that was just a storyline, you know. Because I think they were going to turn Steve Williams heel after this, but I think he got busted for steroids in Japan or something.
In Japan, they don't test for steroids in Japan.
I didn't say they tested for steroids in Japan. I said he got busted for them.
Oh, I got arrested.
Yeah, he was like at the airport with like a pharmacy or something like that, wasn't he? Was that around that time?
Yeah, because remember he had left the NWA for a while for like 2-3 months and then came back like at Clash of Champions or something. So
that's, I think, with the Varsity Club, because I remember they randomly aired a Saturday promo of Williams in Japan, and he like laughed maniacally after last being seen as a good guy with the Oklahoma jacket on, and he came back and joined the Varsity Club.
Yeah, that's right. But yeah,
and
this was
again 6 minutes and 50 seconds. That's what I mean. Why even put Steve Williams in the ring with Barry Windham? I know you didn't want to show up the other stuff later on, but it's like you had the scaffold match after this. It wasn't going to ruin anything.
Yeah,
I don't know. It was just so, again, really shitty.
And if you're going to kill the UWF off, which obviously they were going to do all along, just put him against Flair and, you know, like, do a unification match or something.
Oh, yeah, dismiss it. Put it on Saturday night. You didn't even have to put it on a major show if you wanted to downplay it. Do it in Tulsa, you know, when you ran the convention center next. Because, Christ, you put an office down that way. I mean, do it there. I never understand why they wanted to drag it out. Like, so it's just to do it in the way that they did, although I guess that's what wrestling just does. They just can't handle having something they own, you know, and making money with it.
Yeah, that's so stupid. I mean, I don't know, I never understand that. So,
speaking of making money, I'm on the Wikipedia page. It says the WWF also limited the amount of pay-per-view providers that would carry Starrcade by not allowing providers to carry WrestleMania if they did not carry the Survivor Series exclusively. Only a small amount of providers carried Starrcade, and it drew a 3.30 buy rate, while Survivor Series did a 7.0 buy rate.
Yeah, I actually have the 3-hour version on pay-per-view version of this show, which was only a few cable systems.
Yeah, and I won't digress for too much away from this, but that right there ended up changing the entire cable pay-per-view industry, because basically the providers went to WWF. Well,
right.
They went to both of them, but especially, you know, Turner, they really hammered Turner just because, you know, him being the producer and pumping the show out. They were upset with him, you know, for obvious reasons of being a TV guy, and they were very upset with WWF, and that was the last time. You know, they basically said that type of sabotage will never happen again, and really didn't up until it was basically King and Aram started running pay-per-views against each other in a less spectacular fashion in the boxing in I think the late 90s, early 2000s, where they really started to do that again with each other. But it took a long time before any of that sort of stuff ever happened again.
Yeah, this was big because, you know, at that point, you had different territories would maybe go into someone's city, like Joe Blanchard went into Houston one time, and you would have like a counter card then like next day or the next show, but it would only happen every once in a while. It wasn't that big, you know, it wasn't that common. This was like the biggest dick move in the history of pro wrestling up to that point between like two companies.
And then you remember they tried to get around a little bit, because instead of the pay-per-views going head-to-head, they went with the live clashes against, like, WrestleMania for a couple of years.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the cable system again told them, so don't be doing this shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Costing us money.
I gotta be honest, well, while everybody else was watching The Ultimate Warrior and Hulk Hogan, I was downstairs watching, I think it was Clash of the Champions, Raging Cajun, I mean, which was awesome. It was one of the Flair Steamboat ones, and it's like, always kills me when, like, you know, people talk about how great the Warrior Hogan match was, and they were a little kid loving it. It's like, God, you missed everything that day.
Actually, that was Hogan Savage that day.
Was it? Whatever it was. That was kind of cool. That was the one with Trump. So I know it was WrestleMania 6 then with Warrior, right?
Yeah, you sounded like Drake, and you're wrong. So
Yeah. I get confused sometimes.
In the next match, you had the Rock and Roll Express beat the Midnight Express in a scaffold match. And
this was better.
Again, not anything to... The best thing in this match was after the Rock and Roll Express had won.
Yeah.
Big Bubba was up on top with Ricky Morton.
Right.
And Morton's standing there, and he looks out to the crowd and just points out to the crowd, and Bubba looks, and he punches him in the nuts and then hauls ass down the scaffold. That was the best
fight in the They're on top of a scaffold, and he points to what would be probably, you know, the third deck. Like, oh, look over there. And Bubba looked, and then he got punched. Really? This still works, by the way.
This was a high spot in 1987, what they would call a high spot.
It was a scaffold. There was powder at one time. They tried a little bit more smoke and mirrors in this one, and it, like I said, it was better than the year before, but not by much.
And how much did Stan Lane not want to be on there?
Well,
we didn't talk about the year before because, well, like, Hawk wrestled with a broken leg in that match.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that's right.
So who was the better Midnight, Stan Lane or Dennis Condrey?
Stan Lane and Bobby Eaton. I thought they looked better together, and I thought they had better matches.
I agree.
Yeah, same here.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, the other one drew more money, but the other one, but Eaton and Lane was, to me, was the better team.
Agreed.
Next you had the unification match. You had NWA TV champion Nikita Koloff pinned UWF TV champion Terry Taylor to win the title. Buried.
Buried.
Yeah.
That's about it.
Talking about just a waste. I mean, you got Eddie Gilbert, Terry Taylor. I mean, not even this match. I mean, like, afterwards. You just don't do shit with them. I mean, they were, like, the hottest act in the UWF at the time.
Yeah, I remember when he came in and he won the TV title, and then he won the North American title right off the bat.
Yeah, and then
later
on,
he was awesome in his heel turn and stuff like that.
Oh my God, I thought that was really, really awesome, because WCW the NWA had already, Crockett already bought him, and it was like they did this angle with Chris Adams. And it was awesome, where it was just like, you know, Adams had, I forget exactly what went on as far as, you know, they had a match, and Adams accidentally won by count out, and then Taylor turns on and hooks him up with Eddie Gilbert, and Taylor was really good in that dick role, you know, for being a pretty boy. I mean, it was a really, they did a really good job, and that was like the most effective I ever thought Terry Taylor was, is when he was hooked up with Eddie Gilbert, and they just, again, yeah, they go over there and he just blew it. And it was, I mean, you know, Wikipedia said the match went almost 20 minutes. I don't even remember it going that long, but it was like not long after that, Taylor was gone. Gilbert was kind of in the ether for a little bit, and it was just, again, a complete waste.
Yeah. Well, I said Terry Taylor got buried in this match. Well, he would get, what happened to him later would pale in comparison when he went to the WWF, so.
That's true.
Then in the next match, you had the NWA Tag Team Champions, Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard, beat the Road Warriors via DQ in their hometown.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was the problem with the Road Warriors. I mean, it's just, you know, they weren't going to lose. You know, that's the one reason, one thing I didn't like about the Road Warriors back then, is because I knew they were never going to lose. They were never going to get beat or anything.
Didn't they
lose to
the Masked Superstar
at
King Kong Monday?
Who the fuck remembers that?
Apparently I do.
That's, yeah.
I'll tell you, always against good teams, like, it was cool because I could believe the Warriors lose against, like, the Midnights or Anderson or Blanchard or any of that. So it's like, it didn't bother me too much, but it was just like, I can't believe that. And again, I liked Arn and Tully, so it was cool, and I didn't really realize it till later on how incredibly moronic it was for the Road Warriors not to win the titles in Chicago. And for thinking about it, obviously it wouldn't have been the main event because the title match was there, but it's like, why was this third from the top? It made absolutely no sense either. Unless Dusty Rhodes planned it that way so he could save the day in the semi-main event to, you know, that would be the happiest moment of the night for people or something like that. It just, I couldn't believe the Road Warriors didn't win.
Yeah. I can't, thinking back about how the Road Warriors were about not doing jobs, I can't believe that Hawk actually did that one job for Tim Warner on Saturday night that one time.
Well, he may not have had a choice.
They went so long without doing jobs that when they went back to the WWF and were doing jobs like every week, it made them look like really shitty.
Yeah. Well, and what was the thing, too? I mean, were they weren't the Masked Team pinned by the Mulkeys, were they?
No.
Who was?
I don't remember who. I can't remember. Maybe Arn Anderson was one of the masked guys. I can't remember who the other one was.
Okay.
They haven't told me this, but I just don't remember. Jesus.
That was fucking great. The Road Warriors had to do all the jobs at WWF, and then, you know, Hawk tried to kill himself doing all those jobs. Delta Titan.
That damn draws.
Yeah. Then in the next match, you had Dusty Rhodes pin Lex Luger for the U.S. title in a steel cage. And you had Johnny Weaver as the keeper of the key. Because he had told Dusty the Weaver lock.
That he used to put on his wife.
Did he teach him how to beat up a woman?
Yeah.
That's...
terrible.
That's why they said we were like famous. You put Penny Banner in and choked her out.
God.
That's what she got for fucking backtalking his ass.
Yeah, this was just the road to get to Lex Luger eventually leaving the Horsemen and becoming a babyface and wanted to do the stuff with Ric Flair, so.
You feel like Matsuda has something to do with this, too.
Yeah. I like Lex Luger around this time for a few years.
Yeah, because you didn't grow to hate him. He was still like a new thing. It was still kind of cool then. And the whole thing with Matsuda choked out Johnny Weaver and you know, all of that went on. And it was, again, Dusty Rhodes. As much as I like Dusty Rhodes, I always loved hearing Dusty Rhodes talk. It was by 87, the end of 87, I didn't want to see Dusty Rhodes like in the mix anymore. It just wasn't fun because it's, you know, no way Dusty Rhodes is going to beat Lex Luger in anything. I know he's Dusty Rhodes, but come on.
When I finally found out, like years later, when with the internet and kind of became a smart fan, and found out Dusty Rhodes was the booker. I said, no wonder he's in all this shit all the time, you know, on top. So.
Hey Craig, did you hang up or something?
I did. I didn't mean to, but yes, I did.
Okay, because I thought you were, like, on mute for a second there. I was like, what the hell? Okay.
I'm good now.
Dusty was the booker. I said, well, that's why he's on, like, four angles on every fucking show.
Yeah.
It's Dusty Rhodes, man. Come on.
Yeah, I like Dusty Rhodes. I can say about him. I like reading all those old observers. It's just, like, the hatred people had for him in the 80s. It's funny to read about. So,
I always thought he was awesome.
And then in the main event, Ric Flair pinned Ronnie Garvin in a steel cage to win the NWA World Title. It was a good match. They beat the shit out of each other. Ric Flair won.
Yeah, they did.
I always liked Ronnie Garvin, and it was one of those things until he won the title, like him knocking out JJ and like knocking Ric Flair in the tub and everything after. The whole Garvin getting burned and Precious and Jimmy, all that's all great. And it was like, I really like Ronnie Garvin. It was like, yeah, Ronnie Garvin won the title. And then it was, well, Ronnie Garvin's got the title. And they never did anything with him. He never defended the title. They said he wasn't going to defend the title for 30. I didn't realize how bad, as a fan then, people had turned on him where they made the choice to keep him off TV, apparently. And keep him off wrestling with the title where he wasn't going to defend it. But that was at the time really annoying, too, because it was like, man, in the magazines, you always read about how a heel would take an easy out by saying, well, I've already defended my title. I'll have to do it but once every 30 days. And it was always a coward's way out. And then it was Ronnie Garvin doing it. And it was, man, thank God Ric Flair won the title.
Yeah, I think maybe at that time, too, part of it was, Ric Flair been the champion so many times, it's just like, he's supposed to be the champion. You know, I mean, it's so weird seeing Flair without the title. So, maybe that's part of it, too.
All right, well, now we're in, and we're two shows down, so hopefully we'll make two more by the time we're done.
I was going to say, this one was not very good, as I remember.
Well, then you have bad taste. They went to December. They learned their lesson the year before, I guess, or they just got chased off of November like TNA did off of Monday nights. So they went to December 26, 1988, in Norfolk, Virginia, and. This was, I thought, the first big show after the sale of the company to Turner. So, and then the first match, you had Kevin Sullivan and Steve Williams beat the Fantastics to win the United States Tag Team Championship.
Yeah, I really like this, but I was always a huge Varsity Club fan, and I was a huge fan of the Fantastics, too. I always thought they got a bad rap for being, like, you know, poor man's rock and roll and stuff like that. That was
they were
said about
rock and roll.
Oh, I thought so. I believe it. I really honestly thought so.
with World Class and Mid-South and everything. I always really liked them a lot. Now, I don't know if they were better than the Rock and Roll, but, you know, they were two guys, at least they were two where it was, I don't know, I was never the biggest Robert Gibson fan in the world. But, you know, I thought this was a good Starrcade just because I liked a lot of the guys that were on it, even though, again, when looking back in hindsight with what you know now, you know, how messy it actually was.
Yeah, fantastic. I love that. The matches they had that year with the Midnight Express were like some of the best tag team matches I ever saw.
Yeah, and then the matches with the Sheepherders were fucking awesome too.
Yeah.
Oh man, the barbed wire cage, yeah.
Then you had the Midnight Express defeated the original Midnight Express. This was an awesome,
The get to the mat was one of the greatest things ever on Saturday night.
Yeah.
Whatever, and he gets like a phone call, and he's like freaking out and starts, you know, telling the guy off, and then all of a sudden, Randy Rhodes,
gets the ring,
and then they bust the phone over Cornette. He fucking just blood and gushed. That was fucking awesome.
Yeah, it was like I was like thinking to myself I said, who's he talking to? And then all of a sudden, I see Paulie Dane, because I watched like the AWA. When those guys were in there, and I said, wow, holy shit. And Cornette bladed for the first time, and he did a good job.
Yes.
He got blood banned from CBS.
Again, how cool that was. It was just, yeah, because the last time I saw him was in, he was either AWA or Continental on FNN Score the last time I had seen him. And it was just like they pop up like Muppets on Saturday night, like, wow. I always thought that was really incredibly cool. And at least we got, you know, because obviously I guess it was Randy Rose left first and then Condry or however it went. But, you know, it was just really too bad that they couldn't have done more with this because I thought it was really awesome.
Yeah.
I just remember, you know, you think back and he's like, God damn, he had that big old funky stupid looking phone. But at the time he was like, cool, because he had a fucking phone like that.
Phone was like a brick.
The fast phone.
It was a weapon. It was a weapon, that's for sure.
And Cornette still—he never washed. He never got that suit cleaned, or that jacket cleaned. He still has that jacket, you know, with
really?
All the blood on. Yeah,
that's pretty cool.
Then in the next match, you had the Russian Assassins defeated the Junkyard Dog and Ivan Koloff, and it was a horrible match.
This is the best they could do to replace Nikita was the Junkyard Dog.
Yeah.
There's nothing that the Junkyard Dog has done that wasn't awesome. What the hell are you talking about?
No, what I couldn't believe later on, finding out, like, because I was a big Angel of Death fan when he was in Mid-South, and it was like, I would have been better off with, like, you announcing, like, because it was the Powers of Pain that had left right before this, I think, so that's what ended up leading to these two. And it was like,
Angel of Death and Jack Victory, and those are the ones that had to jump off the scaffold every night after that.
Yeah, it was like, you know what, I'll take the Angel of Death and Jack Victory over two goofy Russian assassins.
Yeah.
Ivan was managed by Paul Jones, and they had like a falling out or something. Remember the match they had Ivan Koloff with one hand tied behind his back against Paul Jones at that Clash of the Champions or something like that? Yeah, this is when Nikita left. Oh, this is when his wife was sick, I think.
She had Hodgkin's or something like that?
Yeah, I think she ended up dying like the next year. So I think that's probably why he left.
I always... The finish to this match was awesome, and they need to do it more. One of the Russian assassins, you know, put a foreign object in his mask and then hit a headbutt to Koloff and ended up winning the match. That's a great finish. I don't know why they don't do that. You know, if they were going to, you know, like the evil Sin Cara, I'd love to see him load his mask. And
like when he
fell
like
from
that.
The grappler. The grappler used to do that.
Oh, yeah, his boot.
Boot.
Yeah, he would load his mask and his boot.
And I always loved that. I could never figure out why. If the heel capped his foot, like,
tap his toe in the corner. That's what loaded the boot. It's like, where is he bringing it up from? It's just,
well, the gimmick
that's
was
what,
in
like,
his heel.
Got the heel toe.
Yeah, the gimmick was in his heel, and he had to push it forward by a... I don't know.
Okay, you're getting way too technical with this stuff.
Look,
you know, they never,
in days of wrestling.
I've seen that so many times in the 80s. You never ever heard the referee, the announcers actually explain how they did it, but it didn't matter because everyone reacted to it anyway after he hit or missed.
Yep.
I remember the assassin when he would use, like, he would stick the thing in his mask and the referee's holding his hand up and you see this big circular thing. It looks like
right.
a crow sticking out of his head.
Yeah.
It looked like Dusty Rhodes' back pocket where you always saw his, he had his dip, you know. It is
yeah.
2 inches back in his back pocket.
I always love when Lawler used the foreign object, but never actually had one.
Yeah.
Then the next match was I thought this was one of the matches I was looking forward to. It was Rick Steiner pinned Mike Rotunda to win the TV title, and that all that stuff with Rick Steiner when he was. When they were doing the turn with the Varsity Club, this was like some of the most entertaining TV I've ever seen. Because he was awesome.
Yeah,
that
he was
talking
awesome.
To his hand?
Yeah, Alex.
Yes. Oh, God, yeah. Oh, my God.
He was like so entertaining back then. He's one of those guys that actually got, like, the simple-minded gimmick over. Because he was still a bad motherfucker.
Yes.
He was awesome, baby.
One of those Mid-South guys where it was like, you know, believable. This man wrestled, he look at him, he can kill you, and he's a pro wrestler. And yes, he may be talking to his hand, but he can beat you up. And, like, you believe he could kill you because he could.
Yeah. And I just remember at the end of the match, he does the victory lap around the ring with the TV title. Just running full speed right around the ring with the TV title. It was awesome.
Yeah.
I think the Varsity Club was probably the only time I found Mike Rotunda interesting.
Right.
It was very interesting.
After that, when he
seen.
Became nautical Captain Mike?
I like his team with Norman, I'll say that. He and Norman were a good team. I love Norman, too.
Yeah, so I agree.
Then you had the United States champion, Barry Windham, beat Bam Bam Bigelow via count-out.
Travesty.
Bam Bam didn't last long in the NWA. He was there, like, for maybe 2-3 months.
He never lasted long anywhere, dude. Like, he never lasted. He was in, world class for, like, hardly anything. He was hardly in NWA for a while. He just popped up. He would just pop up here and there, but he never, ever stayed at all.
Yeah, he was. Well, he had the Japan deal, too, so that's probably why he never stayed anywhere.
I remember seeing him wrestle a fucking jobber match on WWE TV one time, and they introduced him as just John Bigelow. And
John Bigelow.
Yeah, he just got squashed.
Yeah,
big man
to
be squashing.
This is a decent match. Barry Windham probably is his best right here. I love Barry Windham. He's awesome.
Bam Bam Bigelow is one of my favorite big men. That guy can move.
He got Taylor.
I always thought he was so overrated about that because you'd always say, oh, he can do this, he can do that, he could do this, and then he'd do a cartwheel and that was it. And I was
right.
like, what the hell?
That guy was quick in the ring, man. That guy moved. Some of his later stuff, you know, when he was in ECW, that was some good television.
Was it after watching a guy like Bundy, too, and guys who were kind of, I mean, he really... Yeah, he wasn't super swift or anything, but, I mean, he moved around really well. And, yeah, I don't know if they just figured he was going to be on his way out or whatever the deal was with him when he came up and was in, you know, he looked like he was a feud with the Horsemen. And it just never seemed like he got off the ground and was gone. And then, like, Humperdinck was in the WWF after him, and that always blew my mind, too. It was just like, I don't know. Sir Oliver Humperdinck anywhere. Just
they were kind of making the new Lou Albano.
I guess that's right. What I mean. He was just, and like finding out him after the fact, like as a guy who was great, but like watching him as the host of Florida TV and stuff like that, it was just like I could never get into Big Daddy Dink.
Yeah.
There's a drop.
Big Daddy Dango. That was awesome. That's Dusty Rhodes and Sting beat the NWA Tag Team Champions of Road Warriors via DQ. This was built up, you know, they turned on Sting and the six man, and then they stuck the spike in Dusty's eye, and Dusty got fired as the booker. For Blade
on TV. Awesome.
Nobody wanted to boo the Road Warriors. This was a bad heel turn. Bad idea.
Yeah.
So,
it was like the Austin heel turn.
Yeah. It'd be like if they tried to, like, turn Undertaker or somebody today. I don't think it would go. So.
Yeah.
It was Dusty attaching his wagon, stole even more to Sting, too, knowing that was the case, too. It was just like, you know, that's where everything really started to come home to roost, too, of just like people were tired of seeing Dusty.
Nobody
yeah.
got
no, at least
Dusty
in the mix like that.
Just months later, he got polka dots over. What are you talking about, shit?
Well, that's it. Hey, look, but I'm sorry. At the time, he was done for me, and it was kind of exciting, actually, when they were playing the hey, aren't you promos leading into WWF, and it was just like, and it was cool for a while. He was in tie-dye and everything, and Dusty was there, and it was something fresh, but, like, to see Dusty in title matches when the bodies were changing and everything was changing, it's like I wanted to hear him interviewed, but I didn't want to see him, you know, throwing hands with the Road Warriors anymore or getting into a, you know, a prolonged battle with Ric Flair. It was just like, you know,
right.
There's got to be somebody else.
Yeah, we'd already
remember
seen
when he had to fix that stopped up toilet with all the shit in it.
Yes.
Yep.
I'm the American plumbing man.
In the next match, NWA champion Ric Flair pinned Lex Luger in 30 minutes 59 seconds. This was a great match. Ric Flair and Luger always had great matches around this period, so.
I blame Flair.
this is still that two-year period where Luger could actually really move around and was still young, and he wasn't half bad at this time, and he was carryable.
Lex Luger is one of those guys that, because of the aftermags, I knew who this guy was when he came to NWA, you know, because he was. He's in Florida. They just did a big write-up on him. And when he showed up on NWA TV, I was like, oh, that's that dude, you know? And he's got, you know, he had all this hype behind him. And, yeah, Ric Flair got a great match out of him this night.
Yeah, that was really cool, actually, because, yeah, it was Ed the Bull Gantner and Ron Simmons had just started in Florida. And it was like, Luger was a big deal. I think it was L-U-G-A-R or whatever it was. They were spelling his name with an A instead of an E. And then he appears on Saturday night, and it was just like, you know, well, what are you here for? You know, he's up from Florida, and you're working with us, and it was just like, I want to be a horseman. And then just walked off, and it was like, wow. And then became the associate, and all that stuff happened with Ole and the Lightning Express and everything. But, yeah, it was amazing how just by reading the magazines and everything, that was a really cool debut done really well.
Yeah, if I didn't know who Luger was at the time via the magazines, then I would think, who the fuck is this guy wanting to be a horseman?
Right.
He's just like a muscle head, I mean, which he was, but I mean, I actually knew who he was when he came in, so.
Yeah. Yep.
And then I know they promoted, like, a Bunkhouse Stampede, like, for the show, which went on afterwards, and they were interviewing Ric Flair, and you could hear the ring announcer announcing people who were getting eliminated in this match you're not seeing. I don't know. This is when you knew Dusty was on his way out, because this was like the only Bunkhouse Stampede they had. They just stopped it. So.
All right, is that the end of that show?
Yeah.
Yes.
Wow, we got that one down in 20 minutes, dude. We're picking up some steam here.
We had Starrcade 89, which was the night of the Iron Man tournament. I mean, the show was decent. It shouldn't have been on Starrcade. This should have been like a Clash of the Champions.
Why? This is the round robin thing, right?
Yeah, they should have done Ric Flair and Terry Funk.
Why does the Dirty Jap have the job in all the matches, dude? That was fucked up.
Because he's he's a dirty Jap. That's why. And I mean, I would have done main event of Starrcade, Funk and Flair. I quit for the world title. That's where I'd have done.
Was it in February or January New York Knockouts? They ended up doing that. This pissed me off to the nth degree because I like the Doom. And I love the SST, whoever they called them at the time, the Samoans. I mean, the Samoan SWAT team was awesome. And the Great Muta. And those three entities finished, you know, were at the bottom. And it just drove me nuts. It was a shitty concept. The year was awesome. I mean, the 1989 yeah. was awesome. Because after the Flair match with Luger, it's when Eddie Gilbert, Barry Windham, and the Horsemen were picking on Eddie Gilbert, and Eddie Gilbert announces Ricky Steamboat, which leads into an entire year of awesome with Flair and Steamboat and Gary Hart and Muta and Dick Sway. All of these people, you know, the JPEX Corporation, it was awesome. You have all these great
yeah.
tag teams, Doom and the SST, all these groups, and then the way it just – it was just such a shitty way, pardon me, to end the year. It just was, it's a terrible, just a terrible concept, a terrible night. And again, being a Muta fan and a fan of the SST and Doom, and they end up with 30 points between the three of them, I thought it was just very poor.
And you know, this tournament, I mean, it's like, why would I want to watch this tournament? There's nothing's on the line. I mean,
what I wanted to watch in that tournament is I wanted to watch the Great Muta, and I ended up watching the Great Muta job three times.
Mm. I also wanted to see Steiners and the Road Warriors.
Yeah, that too.
Yeah, Rick Flair in the Great Muta in 1 minute and 55 seconds in his first pinfall loss.
Oh, jeez.
I don't know. Hey, just again,
I mean, there's not much to say about this show.
No.
You know,
woman
I mean,
was hot. Woman was really hot. That's what you can say about this show.
Yeah.
Jim Cornette and Jim Ross doing the tag team commentary, and Jim Cornette, I mean, and Jim Ross and Terry Funk doing, like, the singles matches. So that was good stuff.
Yeah, that was good.
It was really supposed to be the skyscrapers here, but you know, Sid got his lung punctured when Scott Steiner gave him a suplex or something. So they had to bail out of that one.
That was another problem. Terry Funk and Chris Cruz that year, before Terry Funk kind of came out and jumped Flair after the match with Steamboat, I mean, that was really good. And him making fun of Sting's TV title by saying, well, what are you going to be next? Like, you know, the washing machine champion, have a big Maytag on your belt? That always made me laugh, too.
Crispy Cruz.
That's yes.
We'll move on to the next year. There's nothing to talk about on that Starrcade 89 stuff.
Yeah. Sting defeated Flair in the main event.
Yeah.
Yep.
Collision Course was in St. Louis, December 16th. And this was the culmination of the horrendous Black Scorpion storyline. Aside from the magic tricks, I love the magic tricks. That was pretty good stuff, even though it was horrible. It was good.
The best thing out of this whole storyline is we got Dick the Bruiser as a referee for the match. Dude, that was
yeah,
so awesome.
And he obviously watched his Bronco Lubitsch tapes to get ready for the show.
I remember when he ran wild on all the Black Scorpions interfering. That was fucking. Oh my god, I marked out.
Man, God, there's a name. Bronco was so painful to watch. There was an AWA ref like that, too, where it was like that slow count of like, oh, God, it was the worst. Oh, Jesus. Sorry. And, you know, the Black Scorpion, I want to say this. I really liked Al Perez. I liked Al Perez a lot. And I just,
right.
In hindsight, cannot believe how stupid Al Perez was to actually think he was going to. He actually told people he was going to shoot on Flair in Florida to take the belt. That just absolutely boggles my mind in hindsight what he gave up being so stupid.
Al Perez is very overrated. He's a guy who's got more push pup, kind of like a Ligger did from the magazines. He looked good and he was okay, but he never had any fire when he was coming back or anything. I mean, he was just average, dude.
Well, see, he did. I mean, I thought he was good with he was, they had him with like Savoldi, and then he had him with Wendell Cooley, and it was like,
if you would have seen that tag with Manny Fernandez and Southwest, you can just see the difference between a guy who could fucking make you think he could whip somebody's ass and a guy going through the motions.
But the thing is, when Perez was on, and when he became greasy and long-haired and smarmy, and he became heelish with Gary Hart, when he was on, he was good as shit, and he was fast. You made him believe it because he had a good athletic, he had an amateur background. When he was on, he was really, really good. I disagree with that. I really thought he could actually be something. And then he goes to the WWF and then went through the motions every night.
Lou Perez from Florida was better.
Lightning Lou Perez?
Yep.
Lou Perez and Vic Steamboat and ICW is like the brother champion.
I like when he used to do the helicopter. And this was another case when he was Black Scorpion in that first match with Sting. On that Clash of the
It was a good match. It was a good match.
One of those I could it was just on Masked Guys. You can tell who they are just by the way they're working. And I knew it was Al Perez that was the first Black Scorpion. So,
and then everybody knew who the Black Scorpion was at the end of this show. God, this was awful. There's a lot of good on this card, but that storyline sucked.
You had to be absolutely stupid to not know that was Ole Anderson's voice in those vignettes.
You had
to be a fucking moron.
And the fact that Ole believes it, I swear to God, Ole believes it to this day that it was the greatest thing ever. Nobody knew it was me, and the voice went like this, and he loves doing the voice, and it's like, Jesus, the most bitter son of a bitch in the whole wide world, he busts his own balls back. Christ, he just... Last we interviewed him for the Georgia show, and he's got an MS and everything. He's confined to a wheelchair. It's just like he starts the show, Jesus Christ, I wish I was dead. It's like he's the most brutal guy ever, but God damn it, he gets some sort of satisfaction after doing that voice.
It's a miserable.
The greatest interview ever, the greatest interview of all time, wrestling related, is him on Wrestling Observer Live, him being a dick today. You got Brian just being a little bitch and just he just shuts the fuck up and doesn't say a goddamn word throughout the whole fucking interview. And
I would have too. I wasn't gonna say nothing. I ain't wanna get yelled at.
Please. And then from Dave finally at the end finally has enough of it and starts kinda like, starts being a little bit of a dick himself, but man, that was that interview, dude. That's wow.
Wow. Ole Anderson was Dave's Al Snow. No reason. Yeah. Anyway, let's get to the matches. In the opener, Bobby Eaton pinned Tom Zink. And
the Z-Man.
Because Tom Zink was like on a big win streak at this time. So. And Bobby Eaton, he was a single now because Cornette and flipped out and left with Stan Lane. So Bobby Eaton was doing singles matches now.
Now, the Z-Man thing, too, did Rick Rude come in that Halloween Havoc as the Halloween surprise or whatever
yeah.
it was? Beat?
Yeah.
That was the thing, too. Like, that was the end of Tom Zank, really, right there, and then he was kind of dead after that.
Yeah, I remember, after this match, he won the TV title from Arn Anderson, on Saturday night or something like that. And then he lost it.
I knew he was going to be doomed from when they promoted him and promoted him and promoted him, and then on the Clash he makes his debut and has a competitive match against like the Cuban Assassin and Barry beats him.
He and Pelmo were a great team, though. I thought.
Yeah, they were good.
Yeah, this guy.
We had the. Go ahead, Greg. Sorry, Greg.
I was going to say this. He doesn't want anything to do with pro wrestling at all anymore, right?
I think he got threatened by WWE, so he can't talk about stuff. I don't understand that. It's kind of weird. He said too many bad things about Stephanie.
Well.
Or something.
So
he didn't have a problem slandering anybody.
I remember I had the nicest argument ever with him on Wrestling Observer Live way back in the day.
He was one of those guys, when you first heard he was going to do a radio show, he said, I'm Zink, what the fuck is he going to say?
The first one was one of the most memorable Wrestling Observers. The second one was almost just as good. It was awesome. But by the third time, he was played out, and he was just like bringing up Pat Patterson being gay for like no reason, and just he was just like reaching for stuff that you know to talk about and you know talk shit about.
When WCW died, so he had to find a new target, so he picked the WWF. So
yeah.
He's kind of sounding like just like a rambling idiot. So
yeah.
But those first two are
two of the best interviews of those Yada shows. I mean, especially the first one.
The greatest line of all time. He's telling a story about talking to Ollie Anderson. Said you're saying paying all this money and all the fans are dressed like chairs.
Oh, I thought you were going to talk about like when he finds out somebody's making so much money, like $250,000. I would suck dick all day for that.
And a great Jim Morrison impression as well.
I got to meet Tom Zenk and Tito Santana at Strikeforce. Tom Zenk, the former AWA.
We're not a tag team, Craig.
Yeah, Tom Zenk and. Oh damn! Yep, you're right. I will. I will just stop.
Another check by Craig.
I can't wait for the thread this week for everybody to hear that. This is gonna be awesome.
Hey, that's the first one tonight. Come on. Moving right along, the Steiner brothers.
They had the Pat O'Connor International Tag Team Tournament.
Oh, that was awesome.
They were doing like an 8-team tournament and having like, we'll see what countries are going on as we move on. It was Free Scott Steiner representing the U.S. defeated Sergeant Kruger and Colonel de Klerk from South Africa, and one of them was actually Rocco Rock.
Yeah.
I can't remember which one he was.
I love this one show. It was awesome because you got to see different people. It was awesome.
Yeah. They won that match. And then in the next match, first time I ever got to see Conan and Rey Mysterio Sr. And they beat Gentleman Chris Adams and Norman Smiley.
That was the first time I saw Norman Smiley.
Yeah.
I mean, that was awesome. As soon as I saw that, I knew Conan was like going to be like a star. I was like just memorized by Conan in that match and his little. He had like a few matches after the tournament on TV. That's too many. But I mean, like he had one with Bobby Eaton, I remember. But I just was like, wow, dude. He actually made me go out and search out Lucha, and then I was able to find it. And then that was like, you know, when Eddie and Art was kind of like coming up and. I got to see that really big period of Lucha, and it's thanks to seeing Conan in this tournament.
And in the next match, you had the Japanese team of Great Muta and Mr. Saito defeated the New Zealand team of the Royal Family, Jack Victory, and Rip Morgan. Muta and Saito were a good team, I thought.
Yeah.
Oh, same here. That was awesome. And yeah, I mean, Conan was awesome, too. And Rey Mysterio just was like, Conan was so dynamic, especially next to Rey Mysterio, too, because I didn't understand why Rey Mysterio was a legend or anything like that. And I just remember Chris Adams and Norman Smiley. I was amazed. I was like, well, they're the UK team. I had no clue that Norman Smiley was like, I had no clue that he was that versed in Lucha at the time and didn't realize that for a really, really long time until he was like well entrenched with WCW, that he was always like, Black Magic and Triple A or whatever it was at the time,
yeah.
And was like a champion. Now Rip Morgan and Jack Victory, that I always loved it. Like they were always the sheep herders grew up watching, and like these two guys as the flag bearers, it was like, man, this is what it's come down to now. Rip Morgan and Jack Victory, didn't they have a little midget?
Yeah, Lord Litterbrook.
Oh, that's right. Lord Littlebrook.
Abdullah the Butcher kidnapped him one week and put him in like a potato sack. You remember when they were the New Zealand militia?
Yeah.
Feuded with the dynamic dudes.
Lord Littlebrook, two of his sons were two of the midgets from the not the Hulk Hogan midget show, but the one that was actually good.
Like pint-sized brawlers.
Yeah, Pint Size Flawless, yeah. And they were actually, and they're actually awesome workers if you actually watch the matches that they did. One of them can throw a fucking super kick as good as Shawn Michaels.
I don't believe that for a second.
I saw it, dude. I saw it.
Well, you're probably high.
Probably.
The next match, you had, finally had some shoot Russians. These were legitimate Russians. You had Victor Zangiev and Salman Ashimikov. They beat Danny Johnson and Troy Montour, who were representing Canada. I remember these were the guys from New Japan. New Japan brought these guys in, right?
Yes. And that's, at the time, I didn't understand it. It was a style and guys, like the suplexes and everything. I couldn't wrap my brain around it at the time. And it was, it was a really short match, and they just kicked the crap out of them. But it was, it was always, they never really put enough of when they would talk about New Japan. Like, because Muda was never a New Japan guy. He just came over as Gary Hart's stable. But when they would use, like, Sasaki and Hashimoto and guys like this, it was like, they never gave you context. So it was just like this weird style that you knew nothing about that. It was like, it looked like it hurt a lot. That's really the only thing you knew was it hurt a lot. And these guys looked like it hurt a lot.
Yeah, the matches with these Russians, they just, I don't know, they kind of looked awkward. Because it's like, it looks like they're trying to wrestle for real when they're in a warped environment. I know, it's weird.
Well, yeah. That's the thing, the fighting I liked, that I thought I liked, was, there were guys that were fake fighting, and that's why it went so smooth. So when they actually had the over the top stiff and like the suplexes and the neck bumps and stuff like that, it was just like, ooh, no, that doesn't look good. Why are you? This is wrestling. Why are you killing that man?
Yeah. In the next match, you had Michael Wall Street, who was Mike Rotunda, and Terry Taylor in 6 minutes and 52 seconds, and they were doing the gimmick at the time where they had Alexander York, and they were getting all his orders from the computer telling him how to beat people, which was like a fucking stupid thing. That was
yeah, but she was a brick shithouse at the time, so it was like, if I have to deal with Thomas Rich to look at her, I guess I'll have to deal with that for right now.
Yeah, and like they would come up with, they said, you're going to beat so-and-so in like under 7 minutes or something like that. So you always
just goes to show you
we're gonna go.
Just goes to show you that a computer as a wrestling character never works.
What are you talking about? The fake, the anonymous GM was getting some massive heat there.
Yeah, and it got a great payoff too.
Oh yeah, yeah. Who was it again?
They hadn't figured out yet.
I know.
Plans changed. Okay. The Skyscrapers reunited for this one show, and they beat the Big Cat Curtis Hughes and the Motor City Madman. This came off of, like, one of the worst matches I've ever seen, with Sid Vicious against the Night Stalker at the Clash of the Champions. And the Night Stalker was Brian Clark, who was Wrath, and Adam Bomb.
Yep.
Yeah. And this was quick match. Very quick match.
I remember, like, the Big Cat guy, like, he had got, like, a little bit of a push in the AWA, and then he came in, and he was just so-so. And then the Motor City Madman, wasn't he just like, pretty much a kind of, like, a big brawler-type dude?
Yeah. You remember who it was?
It wasn't the guy that played Nitron, who was, like, Woman's Bodyguard. Was it that guy?
No.
Because I always thought it was Kevin Nash. I was like, no, that guy wasn't Kevin Nash. I was like, oh, okay. And I don't know. He was just a big dude. I can't remember who the hell it was.
See, Greg missed another one. He don't know who the guy is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Actually, Skyscraper's got, I think, the biggest pop of the night. People were really into him. And the next match had Tommy Rich and Ricky Morton beat the Freebirds. And it was Robert Gibson had a knee injury, kicked him out for like eight or nine months. So Tommy Rich and Ricky Moore teaming against the Freebirds, and at the end, Freebirds lost and turned on Little Richard Marley, who was Rocky King.
Yeah. I actually liked the match, and it was awesome. Richard Marley was awesome, but By this time, it was very painful for me to watch Tommy Rich wrestle. You know, I mean, when I first started watching wrestling, he was the biggest star in wrestling on TBS. And it got painful there towards the end of his, like, WCW NWA career.
Yeah.
Luckily, he he came back strong when he was part of the FBI and the ECW. But, yeah. It hurt me watching Tommy Rich there for a while.
In the next match, you had the back to the tournament. You had Rick and Scott Steiner beat Conan and Rey Mysterio. It was a decent match, if I remember.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
And
I remember it. I remember it being. It wasn't long, and it just. Was Mysterio out of the ring or something like that, or did he get hurt in the first match where this went short?
Yeah, I think he went over like the top rope, like on the Chris Adams, and he like landed on the steps or something like that. And then he did.
Okay.
He did. I think he did like some sort of a dive out of the ring and like landed on his head or something like that.
Okay.
He
did what?
I said he pretty much just crashed and burned throughout the whole show. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He just, everything he did with it was fucked up.
Yeah.
You're coming up in our matches now. We don't know why do you want us to catch you? We're just going to move. Which, you know, there's not enough of that in professional wrestling today. You see a guy come flying at you through the ropes, move.
Just walk away.
Yeah.
Well,
Alberto Del Rio did it to somebody. It was like, it was great.
Yeah,
I'd rather miss a dive on the Steiner than get hit by one.
That's true.
Because they'd be shit out of people anyway. then you had Great Muta and Mr. Saito beat the Russians.
Which I know you didn't realize until later on that made political sense.
Yeah. then in the next match, you had the bull rope match, which they called, I think, a Texas Lariat match, and it had Lex Luger beat Stan Hansen to win the NWA U.S. title. No, Stan Hansen
hated
was not
that.
Doing any jobs for Lex Luger, so they did the bull rope match.
That's hated this. I always loved Stan Hansen. I still remember when he beat Rick Martel, and it was just awesome. I just loved it. I love Stan Hansen. Loving Lex Luger looking like he wanted nothing to do with Stan Hansen, like legit. Because and Hansen had the dip flying out of his mouth and all that and was spitting all over the place. And it was just like, I just love that rowdy bastard. It was just killed me when Lex Luger beat him. I really wanted to see, like, Stan Hansen, like, still wanted to be a little kid and see, like, Stan Hansen Sting title matches. I would have been completely happy.
I remember Stan Hansen in AWA when he'd do his promos, he'd slap Larry Nelson in the face with his hat all the time.
You're out there chasing Pretty Little Tail. I got a big fat wife at home and a bunch of kids that they want me to feed them.
I remember when he turned face on WCBS against Ole back in the day. That was pretty awesome.
It was crazy to see him on tapes like Stan Hansen as the good guy. I see Brody is the good guy anywhere. It's just like, man, there's something a little unnatural about this.
Yeah, I can believe Brody a little bit more as a good guy than Ken Stan Hansen.
Especially because you always saw Brody next to Abdullah the Butcher. So,
yeah.
You know. Stan's opponents weren't nearly as ugly as Abdullah.
And Stan was never a calm talker except in Georgia, where it's just like, you know, go out there and I'm going to whip somebody. Everything else was just like screaming in the bull rope horn or the bull rope or the bells in the background like clanging away and, you know, announcers are cowering. Yeah, just, you know, Stan can't be quiet and being blind. So it's like, you know, with him nailing people, like legitimately nailing them like Luger, where it was just like he just cringing every time he got forearmed in the face.
The next match was the tag team champions Doom went to a no contest Arn Anderson and Barry Windham in a street fight, which I think is probably the best match of the night right here.
Oh, yeah.
This match was awesome.
the promos leading up to this on YouTube, if you can find them with Anderson and Windham in the Junkyard, are awesome. They are awesome. And this was, again, it goes less than 10 minutes. This is Adam Summers' favorite match by far on this show, too. I mean, this feud was completely wasted, was not hyped up like it should have been. And again, you have a street fight that goes to a no contest. It was that just pissed me off.
Yeah, but it was fucking, that was an awesome match.
And we get to see Pork Chop Cash on pay-per-view. Because he was like the attendant for the black guys. And the person that was the attendant for the white guys was the Russian brute from the AWI.
Pork Chop getting ends. Look at him.
Next match, it was the finals of the tag team tournament. You had the Steiners defeated the Great Muta and Mr. Saito. Only thing I remember about this match is the only time I ever saw Rick Steiner do a drop kick.
When guys would wrestle differently because of, like, you know, like the Japanese, again, you didn't know at the time, like the Japanese were watching, yeah, you know, when they would have something like that. This is another one, too. This match could have went like 25 minutes and would have been fine. And, you know, it only goes 11. It was just, again, it was a little bit anticlimactic for me because it just seemed to be too short. And, again, looked like it hurt like hell, you know, especially Rick Steiner and Saito hitting each other. But, you know, again, too short for me, but I guess it could have been far worse.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty good.
Then you had the main event, which was World Champion Sting defeated the Black Scorpion in a steel cage match. And probably, I would say, maybe the worst main event of Ric Flair's career. And this match was terrible.
How long did it take y'all to realize that it was Ric Flair?
When his mouth was sticking out of the mask.
The nose, yeah. I mean, right away, the eyes. It was so, just so
And
bad.
The fucked up thing is you couldn't wrestle like Ric Flair. That's why the match was so bad.
Yeah. And then, like, okay, they had a whole bunch of Scorpions kind of, like, interfere at the end. Do we know who, like, any of those guys were?
The Angel of Death, Wild Bill Irwin, Moondog Rex, things like that.
I just remember I just remember Dick the Bruiser running wild on them.
Good thing you didn't ask Greg that question.
Yeah, I wouldn't know. And now that you know, do you care?
I'm no better for
you
it.
You already forgot.
Sure.
You already forgot.
I hated this because Ric Flair had to cut his hair to get it in that mask, and he was never the same.
I know. I know, right? That sounds like an end of an era when he cut his hair for that fucking thing.
And Ric Flair without long hair is just, I don't know. It's like, it's like Metallica without the long hair.
But that's what we were all talking, too. It's like, that was the first thing when it was like, oh, you know, God, it's Ric Flair. He cut his hair. It was just like, or that was the first thing we said before, you know, the first time seeing it. It's like you saw right through it. First thing, that's Ric Flair. The second thing was, God, I can't believe he cut his hair.
Yeah, that was terrible. Well, we get about 13 minutes. Do you want to run through Starrcade 91 real quick, guys?
Yeah, we can do that.
Okay. Because there's not much to talk about on the show, to be honest with you. It was the Battle Bowl, the Lethal Lottery, the first year they did this.
There's one thing I have to talk about because it's one of my favorite things ever, and it's the best thing on this whole fucking pay-per-view. And that is, I'll let you explain what the Battle Bowl was first.
Okay, the Battle Bowl was they took like 40 names, they put them in a bowl, and they picked one out, and they picked two out, and those two would be tag team partners, and they would pick another two out, and they would be their opponents, which they should have, every week on TV, they should have drawn names and made matches and not just left it up to, you know, to wait until the pay-per-view to do all this. I think it would have probably made more money, got more people watching. Most people aren't going to buy a show if they don't know what's on it. So,
but to me, the most memorable thing on this whole show, my favorite thing on this whole show, is this is the time where Abdullah the Butcher was in the company, and he was teaming with Cactus Jack,
and they were hoping to be tag team partners and they get selected. But it was I believe the opponents were Ricky Steamboat and Todd Champion maybe.
Yeah.
And so they drew Cactus, and I think they wanted Abdullah, and they drew fucking Sergeant Buddy Lee Parker, who
yep.
was pretty much making his pay-per-view debut, unless I'm missing something from the past. And he was all happy and excited, and Abdullah the Butcher beat the living fuck out of him in that dressing room, smashing his head against the lockers, just killed this man, killed him dead. And Cactus went up to face Steamboat and Champion by themselves. And then slowly but surely, you see Sergeant Buddy Lee just emerge from the back, crawling. He crawls to the ring, all the way emotional, just barely makes it to the ring, gets there, and then Cactus tags him in, throws him in, and then he gets, he takes like a body press and gets pinned. But, I mean, it was the most awesome fucking, it was the most awesome pay-per-view debut ever. Of all time.
Yeah. They started off with Marcus Bagwell and Jimmy Garvin defeated Tracy Smothers and Michael Hayes.
Just so you have the Freebirds, and they tried right off the bat. They wanted to make it like anybody could face anybody by having the tag team go against
yeah.
each other.
When you look at the names and who they were partnered with, it looks like they almost did it legit.
Yeah.
Seriously. Ricky Steamboat, Todd Champion, Sting, and Abdullah on the same team. There's some really weird matchups in this thing.
We should do that one way. Take a roster like of wrestlers and just like draw names for Battle Ball or something. Just see what the fuck we come up with.
Probably wouldn't look a lot different than this. I mean, these are crazy. Bobby Eaton and Brian Pillman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They had next. They had Steve Austin and Rick Rude. Beat the Big Josh
and Van Dam.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They beat who?
Big Josh and Van Hammer.
Oh.
Yeah.
I don't know what people
Matt Bourne, Matt Bourne doing a lumberjack gimmick, and Van Hammer, who was, I remember, God, they pushed him when he came in, and God, did he suck.
Ugh.
Yeah. Some people didn't like Big Josh. I liked him. I thought Matt Bourne was
I liked him. He was good. He had good matches. It was Arn Anderson. I don't know how many of him and Arn Anderson matches I saw on Saturday and Sunday that were fucking awesome.
I didn't need to see like a 45-minute two out of three falls match on WCW Saturday night with Arn Anderson and Matt Bourne. It was boring as fuck, but he was just Then you had Richard Morton and Dustin Rhodes defeated Larry Zbyszko and Elie Gante.
Didn't like Elie Gante grab Zbyszko by like his hair and pull him like up from the floor to the like
yeah,
the Zbyszko
slapped him or something.
Yeah.
And he threw him into the ring and he got pinned. Okay, here's where they probably really did pick the
yeah.
out of the hat.
Definitely.
Bill Kazmaier and Jushin Liger defeated Diamond Dallas Page and Mike Graham. Jushin Liger's first shot on live American pay per view. And they put him in
the ring. The crazy thing about this
also at the time where he couldn't go off the top rope.
No, that was next year.
Okay.
No,
the crazy thing about this,
douched him. If I recall correctly, Mike Graham douched him during the match and moved or did something and then like made Liger fall flat on his ass, and it's just like, you know, in hindsight, it's like, you know, the only person that hurt was Bill Kazmaier because the Japanese were watching to see what Bill Kazmaier could do.
Well, that's because he probably did one of the moves that Mike Graham invented, along with fire and wheel. He was pissed.
Match went 13
Lucky
minutes.
Didn't. Yeah. Lucky Mike Graham didn't pull a knife on him.
He was a shooter, you know.
Diamond Dallas Page, he was horrible at this point.
Yeah, especially
yeah.
when he first started, dude. He's one guy who's like, you talk about an improvement from when he started till towards the end. I mean, damn. I mean, but yeah, he sucked when he first started.
I mean, you can't throw like Jushin Liger and like Pillman together against like Bobby Eaton and Ricky Morton or something. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Or if you want a wacky tag team that doesn't make any sense, have at least one like, you know, I don't know. You have Austin and Rude together. Like, I don't know. Austin and Liger maybe makes more sense.
Well, Austin and Road were they were teammates at the time, weren't they?
Yeah.
Hey, they were in the Dangerous Alliance.
Yeah, with Medusa and all that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then we already talked about the Steamboat match with Todd Champion. They beat Cactus Jack and Buddy Lee Parker. And the next match was actually the best match on the show. It was Lex Luger and Arn Anderson beat Tom Zink and Terrence Taylor. And Terry Taylor was playing awesome in this match. Anybody can go back and watch this match. He was the best worker on the show in this whole thing.
Yeah, that was a pretty good match.
You remember, Craig?
Tom Zink, that's not Rick the Model Martel, right?
No.
Okay. Yeah, just
does
trying to
give
make
it
sure.
Away?
Yeah, I think I got that now.
Well, but Terry Taylor, it just showed how good he was, and he was just, he got kind of wasted, like, the rest of his career. But he was awesome in this match.
Terry Taylor was, like, the biggest mistake of his life was going to WWF at the time.
The biggest mistake of his life. Not
fuck
off when they offered him the Red Rooster thing.
Well, that's true.
Yeah, but that's also the thing he's most famous for, dude.
I can't argue with that either.
Who knows what kind of career he'd had if he'd never done that. So
that's true.
Well, that's the thing. You look at like everything. Like I mean, I don't know. He still probably would have been in talent relations and all that sort of stuff because to take a hit like that and then still work for offices and stuff. I guess he would have had that, but I always wonder how true the story is, where it's like he and Kurt Hennig were coming up at about the same time. And Kurt Hennig gets, you know, the Mr. Perfect role, and he gets that, and it's just, I don't know, just completely mind-boggling.
Yeah. Then you had Sting and Abdullah the Butcher defeated Bobby Eaton and Brian Pillman.
That was awesome.
Abdullah's going out as Sting's partner. And Sting's looking at him, and Abdul's like smiling. He said, he's like pointing, like, you me, we're teammates. And he gets to him, and he just starts beating the shit out of him.
Yes, that was so great. And this is where Sting's underrated, too, because people don't really remember stuff like this, like him and Funk and him and Abdullah, but I'm sorry, that was awesome.
Yeah, that was great. Real quick, before we continue, everyone check out angrymarks.com. You can always download and stream our show at angrymarks.com, along with a lot of other shows, like the Angry Marks show, which will probably be starting in like 3 minutes.
Then the next match was Big Van Vader and Mr. Hughes, who I thought were a decent team, defeated the Night Stalker and Rick Steiner.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mr. Hughes was... he wasn't very good.
Nope.
He's okay.
Not a
he
good
was,
big
he
man.
Was okay before he became Mr. Hughes, when he was like, you know, he was like, was
big
he had
cat
like a good
Curtis
year.
Hughes?
Yeah,
yeah.
He was just like the big cat Curtis Hughes, he was okay. But when he became Mr. Hughes, he just, you know what, I'm just going to get up with the goddamn sunglasses.
Well, the glasses at least made me laugh, the snarl on the face that he'd have the whole time.
Right.
Too.
Well, right, he stole that snarl from Sergeant Slaughter. The extended chin and the constant frowning.
At least they did the sunglasses thing where JYD like headbutted him and the glass went into his eye. And
oh, that's right.
JYD helped him and then they formed a team of the cat and the dog.
Oh my.
And
the thing, years later, he'd be getting paid as M.I. Smooth, the Tank Abbott and Three Counts limo driver.
That wasn't it. That wasn't Curtis Hughes. That was Ice Train.
Oh, that's right. That
oh,
was.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I got my large, angry black men mixed up. That's right. Because Hughes came back at that time as Jericho's boy with the vest in WWF.
See,
all right.
Why didn't you rectify that? Him getting that wrong?
The
why didn't
heat
you,
is off
you know,
me.
Say something.
The heat is off of me. Thank you.
Well, you could have said something. You know, you could have corrected him, but you didn't know. So.
I could have, but I didn't know. Right.
Okay. Scott Steiner and Firebreaker Chip defeated Ragnar Man and Johnny B. Bad. Somebody here don't belong.
That's
oh, God. Ragnar Man. I got it.
How many goddamn masks did Brad Armstrong have or gimmicks?
I like Bad Street better. He was great. I liked him as Bad Street.
You didn't like him when he was the candy man and he was handing out candy canes?
Oh, that was funny.
He was the ultimate, if like you ever called a guy a mechanic in wrestling, there he was. You put him in anything and it just, you'd be able to get by with it. Brad's how good Brad, Buzzkill, BA to hanging out with Swole.
Yeah, that was the weirdest fucking thing, Brad Armstrong and the No Limit Soldier.
Remember Jesse James's shirt when he started doing the Buzzkill thing, and they did the, remember he was suffering from the Armstrong curse. So Jesse James was on WWF TV with a shirt that said "Look, Ma, no curse."
Awesome. Remember that weird appearance he was on ECW as an announcer?
Who was?
I don't remember that.
No.
Wait, what? I didn't hear you because I heard the thing telling us we're going up here.
Brad Armstrong was on ECW as an announcer for a few weeks.
Really?
In like 2007.
Huh.
Wow, I don't remember that at all.
That
I
was
remember he
to
said,
like
he said Shannon Moore looked like he said Shannon Moore looked like he fell into an open tackle box.
Okay. Man, no wonder. Oh God, I just felt so bad because I maybe I didn't understand the gimmick. Shannon Moore, where they brought him in and he had that face where he like looked at the camera, and it was like Prince of Punk Shannon Moore. It was just like, dude, this ain't gonna work. Like, I guess it'll work for somebody, but he just looked like a big ass geek to me.
He looked like a big one. He has that book of Dilly Gaff. I don't know what the fuck that's supposed to be.
Yeah,
but we're actually. We're skipping over the most important thing about this match, or one of the guys in this match is, how did they ever come up with fucking a gimmick called Fire Breaker Chip?
He's a fireman. They had a bunch
right.
of heroes.
What was his name?
Like,
his name was Curtis Thompson, wasn't it?
Yeah, he was a
yes.
job guy, like years before.
Yeah.
He was. He had actually got a push in the Pacific Northwest, but I think Craig didn't even know that.
No, I didn't know that.
I was disgusted when the Patriots beat the Freebirds for the U.S. Tag Team Championship.
Isn't there like a story in Foley's book where like a Firebreaker Chip fucking kicked DDP's ass or something, or I don't know, something happened in like a match between them?
I don't know. I don't remember.
Like he embarrassed him in his own hometown or something like that.
Hmm.
Well, I'm
not sure. In the final tag team match of the night, he had Thomas Rich and Ron Simmons beat Steve Armstrong and PN News. That sounds terrible.
PN News.
I just remember that one time where he got like his face smashed and he started crying and screaming, basically.
Remember when he was in ECW?
As the Baldies?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's terrible. Yo, baby, yo, baby, yo. Anyway, then they go to the two-ring battle royal, which I would tell two-ring battle royals are fucking stupid. Why do you need two rings? You know?
The only time I ever liked it, because I had a chance to go to the Bash in Baltimore in 89, leading that thing off and then having the Skyscrapers win and they were splitting the money. And then again, Sid Vicious, Spidey, the fact they were both huge and crazy looking, but Sid Vicious just there was something about him, obviously, to this day. You know, he can't wrestle, he can't talk on the microphone, but people loved it when he gives the sign to, like, kill someone. People still respond. And it was like, that's the only time to me something like that ever worked.
He can't land safely on his own 2 feet.
No.
Right.
Poor
that was when
himself.
They had them all coming out for that battle royal with those stupid fucking crowns. Anyway, Sting won the two-ring battle royal in 25 minutes. He eliminated Lex Luger won in the first ring, and Sting won in the second one, so he eliminated Luger, which would lead to their title match the next year. And I just thought this was stupid because they had that ramp to the ring, and people were getting, like, thrown over the top rope left and right on that ramp, but it didn't count because there was a ramp there for some reason. I don't know. I never.
Well, they didn't touch the floor. You know, as dumb as battle royals are, and as dumb as two ring battle royals are, we're talking about WCW, who actually had a three ring battle royal in World War III, and it was horrendous.
And they had it for several years.
It was awesome because Chavo Guerrero, the Disco Inferno and Alex Wright were like one of the main faces left against the NWA.
NWO.
Right.
Now he's getting shit wrong. See, Craig, you're running all...
I'm fucking stoned. I have an excuse. I've been smoking weed all fucking so long.
That's not an excuse. That just means you're stupid.
That's very professional of you.
Anyway, the Sting won the two-ring battle royal. Yeehaw.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
That was pretty predictable.
These are the kind of years where WCW just... I don't know. I wasn't much into it, probably because, you know, I just graduated high school and started finding out about girls and stuff and booze. So
he was too busy getting laid to watch wrestling. He's so cool.
No. I wasn't getting laid.
Well, that's probably true too.
Please, come on. You were at least trying to. Right. I was trying to, failing miserably, but trying.
What was his name that you were trying to get?
Her name was Maria. Lovely girl. Anyway.
That was the part of this time, too, where it's like Adam Summers, who's 5 years younger than I am, I'll be 36 in February. There's a divide over, like, after the Bash in 89, and because WCW was the way it was, like, top to bottom with cards like this and shitty characters and things didn't flow together... And WWF is kind of the same way. To me, I considered it like a down period. I mean, yeah, there was Doom and the Horsemen and that sort of stuff, and there was some good stuff going on. But because of other interests and being in high school and all that stuff, like, those are dead years to me where somebody's just a little bit younger. I actually liked a lot of this stuff. Again, my interest started to change, too, around this time where it was like, you know, when you start getting into these, you know, the Battle Bowl type of Starcades and everything, it's almost like a blur because it wasn't really that good. You know, a lot of the stuff was, you know, so incredibly bad that it really outshone the good too much, and, you know, I was trying to get laid.
You know, for all the talk, you know, like this was, you know, like the big premier event every year. These were some pretty shitty ones. I mean, when you compare them to WrestleMania, which, you know,
yeah.
I mean, WrestleMania's had some bad ones, but, I mean, I can't remember the last bad WrestleMania I saw. That was maybe, like, in the 90s.
I mean, the Starcade probably wasn't a good again until probably 95 when they had the World Cup of Wrestling, where they brought in all the New Japan guys.
Yes,
that was a great Starcade.
And then they had all the wrong results, man, on those matches. It's like all the, like, it should have been like Eddie going over. It's like all the U.S. team that lost should have been the ones that should have gone over, and the ones that won are the ones that should have lost.
I don't know. Ohtani was pretty awesome.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the flip side at that time is those are getting good. You know, because people remember, like, the ladder match, and they'll remember Bret and Owens from 10. And, you know, like, there was a lot of stuff between WrestleMania 10 and I think it was 15 with Butterbean and Austin beating Michaels where, you know, again, we remember the big stuff out of there that was good, but there was a lot of crap there, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
So, well, I guess we can go ahead and wrap up the show then. Since we're even way over our 2 hours time that we've usually been.
Maybe we'll do the next the other ones next week or something. I don't know.
Oh, let's not do this again.
We'll see what our fans have to say, and then we'll think about it.
You just don't want to get scolded.
Poor Craig.
A bunch of people in the thread.
Craig just wants to do the news where he can actually read what he's saying and doesn't screw shit.
Yes, let me use my talent.
I'm going to send you home with homework like a Cornette and OVW did to those guys down there.
Well, I think I got married in 92, or no, wait, 90, yeah, 92, and so I think I started watching
wrestling.
You don't
even know when he got married.
Right, and then I started watching wrestling, probably started up again probably in 97 or so, 95, 96, yeah, probably around there, where I took my wife and my daughter to a house show. It was on a Saturday, and the main event was Michaels and Luger. And that was good stuff, and so I was kind of hooked after that. But, yeah, this was kind of a dark period. Hmm. Yeah.
Sorry, moves on Telemundo right now. I got excited. Sorry about that. Distracted here. Sorry.
Yes. Well, that's better than Impact.
I don't care that Craig misses some stuff sometimes. I just like seeing people's reaction when he does. Like,
I know, it's great, isn't it?
Out of control with it.
Yeah, Ed can be stoned on the show, but if I get a name wrong, end of the world.
This is way too much obscenities for you tonight, do it, Greg.
You know what? I work in a shop with a bunch of guys that regularly mess up or hit themselves or you know, whatever. If I'm not used to obscenity after working in shops for almost 20 years, then I just need to get over it. So I got over it a long time ago.
And now they're hitting themselves?
You just can't use obscenities on his Facebook wall. He gets very upset and deletes you.
Well, I don't.
Well, the kids can read it.
But you shouldn't be doing that on anybody's Facebook wall.
Thank you. Yeah, I appreciate that. No, I
do it on my own
curse.
Wall, and then, like, one of my mom's friends sees it and then yells at me.
I don't curse, but I don't expect the rest of the world to, you know, change who they are because I don't curse, you know? What am I going to do?
But at any time on this show, do you ever just want to yell out, like, Mean Gene Okerlund style, just like, you know, gentlemen, a little decorum, please?
Yeah, I need to do something like that, and I also need to get like a disclaimer for every time Ed says something way out of line, like the Over the Top Radio does not support the views of Ed Laredo, and you know, something like that. So when he says
like
something
when
stupid,
says
I can
something
just,
like he's gonna go, he wants to go fuck a pussy or something. If that's what you
right.
Sorry.
The disclaimer should be if your name is Rodney or anyone who looks like Rodney, we'd like to apologize in advance.
Yeah,
no, that's
we do have a
chair, not me.
All those people look the same.
Oh, jeez. The views of Over the Top Radio do not reflect. Yeah. Yeah, see, that's the perfect spot for it. So. Oh, Lord.
Anyway,
show
I guess we. I guess we can wrap up. Anyone, Craig, anything you want to talk about before you go?
No, I'm going to go watch some Impact. I don't know why, but I'm going to.
Oh, okay. Rubber Roots on Dixie Carter tonight. I should watch that.
Okay. It'd probably be
Katerin, bad. Anything?
No.
Ship, anything? Anything you want to plug? Any shows coming up?
Well, yeah, he's got a show on Saturday. On Sunday, he's gonna go.
Everybody knows this already. Wrestling Observer Live with Emperor Cito. That's 6 to 8 on Sports Byline and the Adam Light Big Audio Nightmare for everybody on the WrestlingObserver.com site. Georgia Wrestling History on Blog Talk Radio every Wednesday from 8 to 10 with Les Thatcher and Rich Tate. And I think that's about it. So I'm gonna go watch Dominican Porn now.
Wrestling Observer Live, what was once the greatest wrestling podcast of all time, has now become one of the absolute worst ones. And it used to be because of
Jeff,
and now it's because Brian is absolutely horrible.
The garbage, because when Dave hosted it, it was internet only, it was Yada, and now Yada's dead. And we're picking up affiliates like Sports 56 in Memphis, Tennessee. Hello, Memphis. Sports 56, 6 to 8 every Sunday, Sports Byline.
Does and Memphis know about FM? In the last 2 years, it's been even worse since you can't even take callers to entertain the listeners. It's just you and Brian just fucking...
You
the name is very
misleading. It drives me nuts that it can't curse, because there are times you just want to curse on that show. But two, it kills me that there's no callers. There's no Sinbad's not calling in from Chicago. There's no Hannibal in North Carolina. No, but there's Hannibal in Jim in Virginia.
Right. Jim in Virginia is the main one.
Go listen to the PW Torch livecast to hear Hannibal. He's migrated over there.
I see.
And that's very disappointing to me. He turned on us and went over there.
If you don't take his calls, that's why.
Well, it's not my fault here. I mean, I don't know. Again, I'm not saying the sports byline, you know, is equivalent to two tin cans strung together, but, you know.
James in Kentucky, he tries to call Vince McMahon, but he won't return the calls or nothing.
I guess we'll end the show with that. So everybody, come back. We'll be back on Friday next week. So everyone come back then, and we will talk to y'all then.
Be the man! You gotta beat the man! You wanna find out how good you are? You're looking at the matrix shit! Let's go hook him up! Once tonight.